Jim, you got anything to say before we sign off?
Yeah, actually, just so you know, it's a big treat tonight on North State Give and Take. It's going to be an interview with our very own Grant Parks.
Really?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Grant is our GM, and he's always got informative things to say.
Yes.
So tune into that. And with that, we will send you out with a promo and roll you into Ecotopia. It's KZFR Chico.
KZFR 90.1 FM is seeking new members to serve on our board of directors.
Serving on the board of directors allows you, the listener, the member, and community partner, an opportunity to manage KZFR's trajectory, community outreach, and fundraising activities. Candidates with fundraising experience and legal service experience are especially welcome. KZFR supports diversity in our community and encourages applications from all members of our community. Past board of director experience is also preferred.
Applications are available on our homepage at kzfr.org, calling 895-0706, or visiting our office in downtown Chico. To get involved with all things KZFR, we hope you consider applying to serve on our board of directors. Many nonprofit organizations, just like KZFR, fulfill their mission by the generosity and ambition of volunteers in our area. Whether it's being on the radio, feeding the homeless, clearing up our waterways, or reading to children, volunteering helps nonprofit organizations thrive while also providing intrinsic value to each volunteer and member in the community. To see where you can volunteer in our area, visit kzfr.org/community and get involved.
Our guests this afternoon are Geneva Sorensen and Stacy Ware of the Campfire Restoration Project. Geneva is the director of the Campfire Restoration Project and has been in that role since 2020. Stacy is co-chair of the board of directors, and she's been with the project since its inception. She's also known for Respectful Revolution, and they're doing some video work, I guess, for the Campfire Restoration Project. So welcome, you guys. It's great to have both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen and Susan.
First of all, we'd like to hear a little bit of the history. We know a little bit about it, but I don't know that all of our listeners really have followed it. So tell us a little bit about the history of the project, when it formed, why it formed, what was its mission?
I'll take that question. The Campfire Restoration Project started, was founded by Matthew Trum in the weeks following the campfire in 2018, as a permaculture-based response to any restoration and, you know, rebuilding efforts that were going to be happening. The people that gathered were either curious about that or already were on board and really wanted that to be a part of the conversation and the work moving forward. So it was right after the initial couple of meetings that we gathered at the Terry Ashe Center, and a gentleman named John Liu, L-I-U, who's a documentary filmmaker and an ecologist, came up and invited us to set up something called an Eco Restoration Camp, which is an ERC International, which is an organization that he founded. So we kind of hooked up with them and had a couple camps that spring right after the fire, and then the following fall, where we had lots of activities going on and restoration work happening in the burn scar. January of 2020, we kind of regrouped and reformed just before COVID. Geneva took over as the director of the project. Matthew started putting his efforts in some other things and his own things. And he, you know, his land burned in the Bear Fire. So we were just getting hit with a lot. And then COVID. We have been really focused up to this point on creating video content, holding smaller workshops, but really our focus is to our mission statement,
promote ecological stewardship using education, collaborative community action, and sharing resources based in restoration.
Could you tell us a little more about what the camps, your initial camps looked like? How long were they? A lot of workshop activities, I gather.
Yeah, the first and second Camp Paradise is what we called them. We're both on different locations, but the thing they had in common were lots of local people and people from out of the area coming together to camp for 2 or 3 days, during which time we had activities at camp and culminating in a big action day. So the first camp, for example, we did restoration work at Pine Ridge School up in Magalia, which didn't burn, but all around the school burned. So we felt like some restoration work for the kids and the teachers that were going to that school and driving through the burn scar every day was a good way to spend some effort and time. And then the second camp that fall, we were camping here at a place called Soul Sanctuary in Paradise, which we're talking to you from right now. And that big action day, also a multi-day camp, and that big action day culminated, we did that in conjunction with the Permaculture Action Network. And
we had, I would say, upwards of 100 plus people working at the Paradise Community Guild's property in Paradise that suffered a lot of burning.
Yeah, the old Norton Buffalo Hall.
Right. And that was just an amazing day of garden building and cleanup and compost making and compost tea and just so much activity. And then there were other things, you know, satellite activities at both camps that happened throughout a long weekend. And we have another one coming up, right, our first one since that. COVID.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. So what did you do at the school? What kind of restoration did you do at the school, Stacy?
We built swales for water retention. We repaired walkways to the, they have like some mobile classrooms adjacent that had needed some repair. We repaired that. We planted a beautiful native and fruit tree garden in two locations, one next to a classroom and one right in the center where they had a planting area already that just needed some tending. And this, what was cool about that collaboration is it's something that just like sort of happened in the moment at that meeting that I mentioned earlier, with Matthew and John Liu. There happened to be the principal of the school at that meeting. Her house had burned down and she's like, we need something for our kids to do. Like they're traumatized and we need some positive action for them to take part in. Why don't you come up to the school and let's build a garden? I think is how that conversation started, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So that's how that happened.
I'm going to interrupt before we ask the next question to remind our listeners that this is the Spring Pledge Drive on KZFR. Susan and I just recently discovered that we've been doing this show now, Ecotopia, for 14 years.
We were shocked.
And this is our 648th show, but we're really proud of the incredible range of local activists like Geneva and Stacy that we have brought to Ecotopia, along with nationally prominent figures. We've had Bill McKibben on the show. We've frequently had Paul Ehrlich, who wrote The Population Bomb back in the late 60s, alerting us to that crisis. We interviewed the late Ernest Kallenbach, who wrote the book Ecotopia, after which this show has been named. So we're eager to get support from our listeners, not only for this show, but for KZFR generally. You can go online. That's the best way. KZFR.org/donate. You can also look. There's a great list of KZFR swag there. T-shirts, dog collars, license plate holders, and so forth that we send out as thank yous for your donations. You can also go on Venmo. Go to at KZFR901. We do have live people in the studio for the first time in 2 years, 530-895-0131. Or you can make a text to pledge KZFR and then punch in 44-321. So good chance while you're listening to this excellent interview about Paradise Restoration, and think about the kinds of things that Public Affairs Program brings you on KZFR, consider, please, putting in a donation. Back to Stacy and Geneva.
So, how?
Well, and congratulations. Goodness sakes. Yay.
14 years. Amazing.
Amazing.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. You're welcome. I would like to know how, and all of our listeners would too, how has the Campfire Restoration Project developed in the last, 3 years?
3 years almost.
How has it changed since its inception? What's new?
It's been over 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Over 3 years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it started as sort of like an emergency response to disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having the camp model sort of, you know, these action days or a large multi-day events that people can come and participate in. And then with COVID, I feel like and also with the conversation that we had together as a group of how do we shift from disaster response and sort of shift to being prepared or implementing strategies and techniques that help us continue to recover, but also to prepare and kind of be adaptable to our current climate and kind of our current land situation or in our ecology here. So I think that that's been a shift in, you know, the inception of response to now kind of a longstanding community resource for people to access information, to learn skills, to gather together and share ideas of how we can continue to implement these things within our community, not during disaster times, but sort of for more sustainable ongoing practices. And I also feel like COVID shifted our approach in terms of how we're presenting education and how we're engaged in community action from to more sort of intimate, local focused, hands-on workshops with topics that typically, it's not formally, but typically fall around skills in water capture, management, saving, so water, soil, from rebuilding soil to, you know, myco remediation stuff that has been talked about at points to compost building. I know, you know, Cheetah's involved in that and he's been partnered with us in some things, and cover crop stuff to, you know, so there's soil focus. And then we focused a lot on seeds and replanting. So that's sort of the seeds and the trees and the plants, whether that be through plant giveaways or tree giveaways, mm-hmm. or gathering seed through our, you know, collaboration with TEK Chico and planting seeds.
That's a way that, that's a shift too, is our collaboration. We were at first, you know, just like straight permaculture model. Right. And we've kind of grown into a more collaborative thing with, so we're like a, sort of at a conjunction of that with traditional ecological knowledge and partnering with TEK Chico.
Mm-hmm. So what were you able to do during COVID? Were you able maintain?
We did a lot.
Okay. Oh, okay. Good.
We did a lot, actually. We did a massive, it was meant to be a one day, but it turned out to be, was so popular, it turned into a 4-day pre-giveaway around the anniversary of the campfire that second year.
It was a collaboration with Butte County RCD, and we gave away blue oaks and then other native hardwoods.
I think we gave away about 3,500 plants and trees over
That's
4 days. Yeah,
wow.
I know. It was such a cool thing. And on our last day, it snowed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing. We did some really great video work. We have an awesome video, if I do say so myself, about blue oaks that we made for that particular project.
Nice.
And we also did a great, with Matthew, we did a great broom removal video.
Okay.
And we're about to premiere our latest video soon about installing the first legal, it's simple, but it's the first legal gray water system, mm-hmm. permitted gray water mm-hmm. system in Paradise.
Wow. So do you
Which
have
is interesting.
Team? Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and those videos are also available on the Respectful Revolution YouTube channel.
Okay, so on either the Campfire Restoration Project YouTube channel or the Respectful Revolution YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Geneva, about, I think it was when we were talking about the trees.
But I was going to say with the gray water video,
right.
or not video, but the gray water, you know, the Town of Paradise actually had the permitting language and information written, but I guess it sort of got adopted shortly before the fire, or maybe, not too long before. So nobody had ever done one before.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, the town had to go through and look through and say, oh, yeah, we actually do have guidelines for this. you know, went through with us the process of getting this permit. This was a shower to soil, so
it was actually a laundry to landscape.
No.
Oh, different than John.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So laundry to landscape does not require a permit, and the shower to landscape does require a permit, just because of the body film potential contaminants, I guess. So anyways, so it was fun to sort of work together in collaboration with the town to try to say, hey, these are practices that actually you have language for, we have infrastructure for, but are not being utilized in a way. So how do we sort of promote this, you know, technology? How do we support people going through the process? You know, how do we kind of revive this information so that people use the things that already exist? You know, right. You're not necessarily reinventing the wheel here. It's kind of a tried and true practice, but for some reason we're not, you know, moving forward with it a lot.
And I apologize. We did a workshop with the public during COVID and not the
inside. Stacey, we've lost you.
We lost you there.
Your voice went away. Oh.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I apologize that we did do a shower to landscape as a workshop with the public during COVID. And then the next one, the laundry to landscape, was what the install that we filmed and created a video about. Mm-hmm. My apologies.
It's always odd to me that governmental units don't promote the things that are good for the land. They're so backward in their thinking about things and so conservative and traditional that, like natural building, you know, natural building is low impact, safe, good for the environment, and yet it's tough to find a place where you can do it without a huge hassle or that you can get a permit at all.
I'll just put in a half-hearted, empathetic note for the people who write those laws. Most of them are what I call, after the cow gets out laws. Something happens. Mm-hmm. Somebody goes into a shower wearing, I don't know, automotive grease, and it comes out, and then you get elaborate restrictions on shower to landscape. And one of the problems I think we have, this is just an opinion, editorial opinion here, is that we need to sift through those laws from time to time and consolidate them and separate these individual isolated cases from stuff that's really meaningful. What does it really take to do a decent gray water system and not get tangled up in axle grease?
Right. And look at Cobb as an example, like Cobb building and natural building. One of the first things I learned after joining Campfire Restoration Project was, you know, we brought a natural builder named Miguel Elliott. He was part of a camp. And we talked about how clay, there's a just, you know, an overabundance of clay soil in Paradise and in the ridge communities. And that's what you build Cobb with. And it's fire resistant. Yeah. So, you know, it was just like, wow, what an opportunity we have here to fold this in to the new regulations and recreate a lot of what was lost. And it just hasn't been happening.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, actually with Cobb and Paradise, it's like the ingredients that you need are clay, which we have here, water, which we have here,
grasses and straw, which we have rice straw down in the valley. And the only thing that we don't really have is the sand. So you'd need a little bit of sand in there.
But really, we have everything that you need to build a home within, you know,
a few miles,
right? To and then, like you said, it actually gets stronger with heat. It's kind of like a firing of clay, you know, it gets Yeah, and actually, we do have. We are working on trying to get a Cobb home built here on the ridge that's load bearing and permitted. So we'll let you know how that goes.
Yeah,
in terms of moving through that. And I will say also, just, you know, the town of Paradise actually was super helpful in helping us get this permitting stuff through and wanting to you know, help us do this demonstration in support of the workshop. So I don't want to poo-poo on them. They were,
yeah, understand.
Just it's just underutilized, I think.
Yeah. Let's talk about, but I think everybody should be promoting it. let's talk about your upcoming May Day camp. It's May 1st. And there, I looked at, you know, kind of the description of it, and my goodness, there's so much going on. So, can you describe some of the events and activities and stuff that's going to be there?
Sure. Well, I think we're really excited, one, just to be in a place where we feel comfortable inviting people to come and gather and camp and be on the land, because I do think that there's something really powerful and connecting by being out and working together on a project and also sharing a meal and even camping together. It's medicine for the soul, I think. So it's exciting to be able to just create that offering for people. So the intention is to,
it is
a 2-day. So the intention, starts on April 30th. There's an option to camp at Soul Sanctuary. And then the kind of larger day event, full day event is on Sunday, May 1st. And in some ways, it's sort of a
like a coming out party.
A coming out party for you know, Campfire Restoration Project to be able to share with the community what we've been up to. We've had well attended, more intimate workshops over the last several years. We did we planted over 500 fruit trees in, you know, Butte Creek Canyon and Concow and Paradise and Magalia last spring. So we've been active, but it hasn't been, you know, more celebratory. So it's sort of a celebration of what we have going on now, let people know what we're doing, you know, make some plans and excitement for the future. And just let, you know, a chance to gather and celebrate. It's Beltane, which is the May Day. So it's the center point between the spring and the summer seasons. So we try to do things based on the seasons, sort of in conjunction with the natural cycles as much as possible, because we feel like that's
our guidance. Absolutely. Yep.
Describe some of the things that you'll be doing there.
There's a list.
Stacy, we keep losing you. Are you behind your scar?
No.
Okay, we have.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
usually you can't shut me up. No.
we hear you on Saturday. But not clearly.
Okay. No, on Saturday.
Go.
Saturday. Sorry. That's okay. On Saturday, the camp, you know, we'll be welcoming campers. And that afternoon, we'll take a field trip up to Concow to kind of see some restoration work on a property there and some examples of some simple off-grid living. And that night, we'll gather back here at Soul and have a fireside chat and open mic. And that'll be kind of just like a nice celebration. And then Sunday morning, we'll hit the ground running with a compost workshop. We'll have a TEK discussion and native plant walk.
We'll just name traditional ecological knowledge. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
TEK is. And that's going to be led by Allie Meadows Knight, our local heroine for land restoration. She's a, you know, I'm sure most people know her, but a powerhouse.
Yeah, she and for sure Raphael will be here. And another exciting thing that Allie is doing is we'll be bringing up a mobile kitchen from one of the other camps, and she'll be live painting a mural on the side of the mobile kitchen. We'll be serving lunch, and that'll be available for purchase. And we'll also be having a healing tent. We'll be offering a guided forest therapy walk. We'll be
What else?
Screen printing t-shirts. Yeah. We're going to have a maple.
Yeah, Petal Press will be here screen printing t-shirts. Okay. And there will be a maple, like Geneva said. we're going to have an abundance table. All kinds of things.
So our partnership, we we're premiering our Greywater video.
Forgot about that. Yeah, we're premiering the video that day.
Spiritual as well as technical, it sounds like. I mean, chance.
Yes. And a fruit tree giveaway.
Oh, wow. Nice. Okay. So how do people register? You want people to come. Do they need to register in advance?
Please.
Yes, we'd love that.
Okay.
Eventbrite. So there's an Eventbrite sign up. I just added the flyer to our website. I just have to say, sorry, our website is a little out of date. We are working on that. So if you looked at it and it seems like, this isn't current, well, you're right.
it's under restoration.
Under restoration right now. But the flyer is on there. We also have a Facebook presence. There should be a QR code for the Eventbrite under our upcoming events on our website. You can also always email campfirerestorationproject@gmail.com if you have any questions about it. But yes, please register on the Eventbrite. It is a free event. It does cost, because we like to try to pay our presenters. We think that this knowledge and this information is valuable. We think it's worth paying people that have this knowledge to share. And so if you have the capacity to donate, there's donation-based tickets on Eventbrite as well. The minimum donation is $1. So if you feel like that's within your capacity, we would appreciate it. And also, we want everyone to be able to participate and learn about this stuff. So if that is a challenge financially for you, then please, you're welcome. Come for free.
And we should
go ahead, finish, Stacey, and then
I was just going to say, we should mention that as in January of 2020, I think is when it happened, we got funding from North Valley Community Foundation through the Butte Strong Fund. And so for that next year, that money was very important in our growth.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to mention that.
I'll take a moment just to remind listeners, we're talking with Geneva Sorensen and Stacey Ware of the Butte Restoration Project, Campfire Restoration Project. This is KZ Ecotopia on KZFR, and we'll remind you that we are taking pledges on KZFR's website by phone at 530-895-0131, Venmo at KZFR901. You can text pledge KZFR 44321. And I just want to tell you a little bit, the purpose of this fund drive is to raise about $40,000 for our emergency preparedness plan. I suspect everybody listening tonight, this afternoon, has had loss of power in the past several years. KZFR is trying to prepare for that. We're going to put a generator on the roof of the 341 building that would kick in if our sponsoring agency, PG&E, stops delivering juice to the studio. We're also going to put a generator. Yes. Okay. Thank you. In the slim chance that your electricity goes out in the near and frequent future. We're also going to put a new generator up at the transmitter in Magalia, and that will cover the transmitter. Now, if you're using a plug-in radio at home and you lose power, you won't be able to hear us. But if you're in your car, if you've got a portable machine, with this equipment that we're raising money for, KZFR will stay on the air. And we're being a little bit facetious here, but KZFR does actively, in emergency situations, broadcast information that's of importance to the community. So we want to continue to be on KZFR.org/donate. We'll go back now to Stacey and Geneva.
So just mention one more time the dates and times of the May Day Project, and then I want to move on because I see that we are spending a lot of time doing this.
Sure. So it's going to be, it's a 2-day event. It starts on April 30th in the afternoon. That's a Saturday. And there'll be a field trip up in Concow. There's the option to camp. You can camp even if you're local. And then it'll be Sunday, May 1st, starting around 10 a.m. on the 1st. It's going to be at Soul Sanctuary. That's S-O-L Sanctuary up in Paradise. And I would just mention one more thing is that if you do plan on coming, bring a carpool with your friends because parking is limited. And besides, you got if you're coming from Chico or beyond, you know, jump in the car together and join in with your friends. Also, we're trying to have this be a waste-free event. So we have lunch for purchase, but it's a BYOB. Not necessarily your beer, but your bowl and also your plate and or spoon or fork or cup. So please be as self-sufficient as possible.
And you can come for one or both days.
Yep.
It's not an all or nothing thing.
And we'll should have like a schedule of events with some timing coming out in the next week or so. So people can kind of know what the day flow will look like.
Can you tell me a little bit about Soul Sanctuary? I can see that you're in a yurt.
Yeah, so Soul Sanctuary is a nonprofit that is located here on the Ridge. They specialize in life coaching and emotional well-being, spiritual well-being. They've been in service for over 20 years. Helping people through trauma, challenge. They've also received some funding from North Valley Community Foundation, and I know that they have regular wellness offerings, both online and in person, for fire survivors. So I do recommend if you or someone you know is struggling or could use some support or uplifting, you can go to soulsanctuary.org. After the campfire, so the director of Soul Sanctuary grew up in Paradise. She was not living in Paradise during the fire, and the organization decided to sort of relocate here post-fire to serve the hometown community. And so it's been a bit of a professional journey for all of us. I have some relationship there through family with the organization, and it's similar to my journey coming here, which was like I was living out of this area during the fire and...
But grew up here.
Mm-hmm. And really felt called to return and figure out how I can plug in and support, you know, a community that felt like home and felt like was in a little bit of need. So several of us kind of ended up migrating back here.
You are both what I call boots on the ground visionaries. And I wondered if you could maybe give us a little bit of your vision about Paradise, let us say, 5 or 10 years down the road. What might a neighborhood look like if they attend your camps and learn these techniques? I'm guessing it's not a neighborhood of McMansions with lots of lawn. What might it look like? How far apart would the houses be? What kind of construction? Just tee off and give us your vision.
Yeah, you know, I don't, I mean, I have visions of little eco-villages, and I also, I am a visionary, but honestly, I'm a person that's grounded in reality pretty heavily, and I don't have control over all of the things of how people turn out, and I also understand that it's not everybody's priority. Obviously, I would love to see Earth and Homes go up. I'd love to see, you know, some good defensible space, some edible gardens, you know, an abundance of native plants and seeds, but also an abundance of local food. I'd love to see neighbors helping neighbors, you know, and I do think that there is a lot of, I'd love to see water conservation. I'd love to see ponds and non-plastic water tanks that, you know, might melt. I'd love to see, you know, like gray water systems and, you know, things that make more sense, more observation, more relationship with the land, and utilizing the natural resources that exist in a certain space, and working with that versus against it. You know, prioritizing the needs of the land is similar to the needs of our own, or seeing where those needs overlap and can co-support each other. You know, and I also know that people are eager to get home, right? And I know that, you know, the desire to want to just get back into a place that feels like home and not go the extra alternative route is a reality for people, right? And so there's a lot of things that can happen, and there's just a lot of moving parts. People often ask me, oh, how is Paradise doing? And it feels difficult to respond for an entire community, you know, because some are doing fine and some are still really struggling, right? And so, and there's a lot of influencing factors on that that are in pretty much no one person's control. And I think that's where I feel like Campfire Restoration Project really does have, that's where I feel passionate, is to engage and empower the local community member that maybe doesn't feel like an expert environmentalist, doesn't feel like an expert gardener, doesn't feel maybe like an expert anything like me. I don't feel like I'm expert at anything, but to create a space for learning and for exploration and curiosity to learn some of these things, to have a non-intimidating environment to just share ideas and explore, because I feel like that's how we learn, is by doing it, and building community with other people that are, you know, interested in that. And so how do we kind of share practical skills that feel relevant to their situation? You know, but I just had somebody from the Fire Safe Council call me because they were asked to teach a group of new homeowners that got homes from Habitat for Humanity on how they could design their landscaping. And, you know, I wasn't able to participate because I was out of town, you know, but it's like, okay, well, it's all on one cul-de-sac. Like, how do you collectively maybe plant different local foods or different fruit trees so that you have all the fruit trees you want, you know, between the four neighbors? Or how do you make sure that your yards each have a little pollinator space with native plants for, you know, native pollinators and that are drought tolerant, right? So how do you look at your slope and, you know, the aspect of your house and where the south sun comes in, and, you know, where do you get shade and where does it tend to be a little cooler or moister on your property? And, you know, so observing those things and being able to maybe work together as a group of neighbors on a cul-de-sac to design a little zone that, you know, helps our, you know, other than human being relatives and also each other. That to me feels like a vision, right? And you might have more. And
I was just going to add, we're super interested in bringing nature in as a major collaborator, as well as traditional knowledge that has been gathered and practiced for thousands and thousands of years, you know, before Europeans came here. So, you know, there's lots of ways to go, but we need to incorporate nature into these things more.
I want to get back to some of your activities after that really wonderful visionary description, because I'm with you all the way. I want to talk a little bit about your composting thing. There's been a lot of talk about SB 1383. You know, we've interviewed the Eric Miller and Craig
Sissel
from the
Neil Road,
and and I'm wondering how you see it and what you all are doing to work with it.
Let's just clarify, that's keeping organic matter out of the waste stream.
That's what
the bill is about. Okay.
So SB 1383 is a requirement to divert organic waste from the landfill. So that would require businesses and homeowners. And so currently counties and towns are figuring out how they're going to adapt to this. And we have a small, so CalRecycle put down some funding. And so we have, there's a group called California Community Compost. Oh, I should know this name, but they got the grant. We have little sub grants. So there's probably 20 small community composting projects funded throughout the state of California. We are all submitting data back in terms of how much organic waste we're diverting. What's our feedstock, meaning like what are the ingredients of our compost, and how much compost are we producing and what's happening with it. And basically trying to build a data, like a, like facts or data that shows that community composting is beneficial, and maybe beneficial even beyond just the food waste that's diverted or the organic waste that's diverted, but perhaps the beneficial of it building soil or growing food that then gets distributed to the community, et cetera, et cetera. So with this funding, we sort of kickstarted Paradise Community Compost, which is a collaboration between Soul Sanctuary, because that's where the operations are held, and Campfire Restoration Project in terms of bringing in some of the knowledge. Thank you. So it's the California Alliance for Community Composting is who got the funding from CalRecycle. And so what we've done, and we are currently collecting food waste from two grocery stores on the ridge, two restaurants on the ridge, and probably about five households on the ridge, and diverting it, making compost. And then the goal is to try to expand that. We are in conversation. I know that we're sitting on the special task force for a solid waste management for the county. So we've been in conversation with, you know, the folks at the Neal Road Landfill and Recology, et cetera. And I know that as it stands now, it seems like a lot of the organic waste is going to get dispersed to the facility in Oroville. I think other towns or cities are also from even out of county are planning on dropping waste there, which I think is fine as a result, but also quality of the product there could be questionable in terms of its, you know, how high they cook it, you know, or how well the piles are being managed. And so I think trying to promote community composting as another option. What does that mean to set up small community composting projects throughout towns? Again, that sort of builds on the vision that I was sharing before of neighbors helping neighbors, of local kind of citizens taking participation or participating in some of these actions. I think one of the things that we've learned from all of the disasters that Butte County has gone through is that the county or the town or the city or even the state or the feds cannot solve all of our problems, and they can't anticipate all of our needs. And I really think that there is a lot of need for the community to step up and support each other and help take care of our needs, because there's just everyone's stretched so thin, you know? And so it's, I think it's unrealistic to expect that the county or the town will take care of all the composting, and that resource of compost, of food scraps, right, is leaving our area and may not come back. So how do we keep that resource in the community, whether that be to grow food or, you know, build soil quality, increase water retention in the soil, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
And all of these things that we're giving our energy to are beautiful. I just, you know, like, it's all nature-based, gorgeous, life-affirming action that we all can take. And it's just a wonderful thing. And it's all, I just, for me personally, I just feel so strongly that it's what the planet wants. It's what the earth wants us to do. We're great stewards when we want to be. And we can do this together with the beautiful planet that we get to call home. I mean, what an honor to live here.
Right.
All this stuff is gorgeous. We have so many solutions.
Yeah, it's great. We're almost out of time here, so I would like you to at least have a chance to talk about your TEK wild tending plant walks and get a little information about how to get in touch with you, how to hook up with you guys. So first, the wild tending walks.
Yeah, and let me just quickly say on the, just to wrap up on the compost piece, is that we have a, we're holding Saturday mornings from 9 to noon at Soul Sanctuary. Is a pretty casual, we will be out there building compost piles, turning compost piles Saturday mornings. So if you have any interest in coming and checking out what Paradise Community Compost is doing, feel free to come out. That flyer is also on our Campfire Restoration Project website. We talk compost. You can help us take off packaging off food. It will make you realize how much waste is on all of our produce. You spend hours taking it off. So feel free to join us on Saturdays for that. I will say that we will not have it this coming weekend, Easter weekend. The two of us will be out of town. So not this Saturday, but any following Saturday we'll be around. And then the TEK wild tending plant walks. We approached Allie and Raphael about these over a year ago. And they kind of started as one of our workshops through our North Valley Butte Strong Fund grant. And it was sort of an addition to the Friday work that happens at Verbena Fields, but an opportunity for people to come and sort of walk the property and see what goes on. I think a foundational tenet of traditional ecological knowledge is really deepening and acknowledging the different relationships that we have with the plants and the animals and the service they provide. And so the intention is to sort of be able to see these different keystone native plant species throughout every season, you know, see how they look in the fall and see when they put out their seeds and what are their blossoms look like, you know, and how do they dry out in the summertime and what little habitats do they, you know, do well in, and what service do they provide us? And I think engaging and inviting us as humans to not see ourselves as separate from the environment, but critical components to, you know, land stewardship and land wild tending. So it's certainly an effort to raise up and promote traditional ecological knowledge as a framework. It feels like it's the foundation. I mean, really, permaculture is based in traditional ecological knowledge, but, you know, some Caucasian descent folks kind of gathered up that knowledge and packaged it as permaculture. And, you know, that's our current permaculture. So it was, you know, from the Aboriginals in Australia that sort of came from. So it's this process of observing, of seeing ourselves in relationship with it. So that happens every month. We celebrated our 1 year anniversary of that back in February and March, which is exciting. And last month we had almost like 30 plus people there with lots of new faces. So it's a good time. It's beautiful. We get to gather seed and plant seed sometimes and learn about the uses. So that's the last Tuesday of every month. And the time of it sort of shifts again with the seasons because it's outside. 4 o'clock in the winter is different than 4 o'clock in the summer. So usually it's about 2 hours before sunset is when we start and finish. So last Tuesday of the month, 2 hours before sunset.
Hey. You know, those are led by Allie Metters Knight and Raphael DeGenova. I'm not sure if I'm saying his last name right. And it's a beautiful, again, that word, beautiful way to come into contact and really gain some perspective that we're all living on occupied Machupta territory and that tribe is here and vibrant. And, you know, we have a lot to learn from one another.
We literally. Go ahead. ahead.
Well, there is a hope to continue to partner with TEK Chico to sort of be in real partnership, I know, to spread the Verbena Field kind of action to the ridge, you know. So nice. Allie came and did a workshop up here, and we're trying to kind of bring, you know, spread that seed. And I know she's talked about mm-hmm. that, but spread the Verbena field seed of, yeah, up onto the ridge.
In the 1 minute that we have left, could you talk a little bit about how people can become involved in the Campfire Restoration Project, if there are opportunities to volunteer? I mean, you've given us lots of possibilities for how to enter into the things that you're doing. Go ahead, Stacey.
Sorry. I thought you were done. I really think the best way right now is to consider coming to the May Day camp, either on Saturday or Sunday or both days. Check out our Facebook page. There's lots of information there. And that's an easy way to plug in. We'll be doing more in-person events this year. We're kind of planning out our schedule right now. And there's lots of things that we're planning. We'll be doing partnership workshops. We'll be offering our own workshops. So just stay tuned. There's going to be lots of ways to plug in. Also, you can get on our mailing list. We just started producing a quarterly newsletter. And that will always have a lot of information about ways to plug in with the organization as
website.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on our website, join, there is a volunteer. We have a volunteer form that you can fill out if you're interested in either being like a one-time volunteer, or if you want to get involved more intimately with our project and the kind of operations and movement of it. I have to say it's super fun. It's a group of really bad A women, mostly. Fun work.
Tell us the website, Monica, Campfire, once again, please.
Yeah, campfirerestorationproject.org. So, or you can join our newsletter.
Or email us.
We are looking for volunteers for the May Day event. Mm-hmm. So helping us sort of set up, if you don't want to go to the field trip on Saturday, we'll be setting up on Saturday afternoon at Seoul. So we'll need some support there. And there's a link in the Eventbrite for that volunteer sign up.
Great. Awesome. All awesome.
Or you can always just email Campfire Restoration Project.
Thanks so much for offering the opportunity to speak with you today, you guys. Love what you do. KZFR is lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking with Geneva Sorensen, who's the director of the Campfire Restoration Project, and Stacey Ware, who's the co-chair of the board of directors for the project, and doing amazing work. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're both super busy, so thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen and Susan.
North State Give and Take is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural